Today's reading is taken from John chapter 19, verses 25 to 27, on page 1088 of the Church Bibles. Near the cross of Jesus stood his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother there, and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, "Dear woman, here is your son." And to the disciple, "Here is your mother." From that time on, this disciple took her into his home.
When my two daughters were little, they both made enduring friendships with two particular children. And they used to spend so much time at these friends' houses that people might have begun to imagine that they weren't my girls at all, but they were actually the daughters of these two particular families. And indeed, one of my friends said to my oldest girl, "You'd better call me Mummy Two." Two as in the number two, not T-O-O. And that is what Kate calls her to this day. And Mummy Two's children sometimes call me Mummy Two. It can all get a bit confusing, to the extent that Kate's Mummy Two was once asked, "Exactly how many daughters do you have?" And she said, "One of my own and one borrowed one," or something to that effect. And it was a great blessing to me, knowing that my girls had safe homes to go to and safe people to confide in if they needed someone other than me. Also, I knew that both friends' mothers would give them sensible advice with which I would be very happy for my daughters to hear. So it was a win-win situation all round. For many different reasons, we form various kinds of relationships with people who are outside our birth families. And the Bible tells us how Jesus gave us a whole new way of being family. And this wasn't because Jesus didn't love his birth family. It was just that Jesus' priority was to show us how we could become part of the family of God. And this sometimes led to a few misunderstandings, not least because Jesus' own birth family didn't always exactly get what Jesus was doing. Once when Jesus was teaching, such a large crowd gathered that his disciples were not even able to eat. Mark 3, 21 and 31 to 35. When his family heard about this, they went to take charge of him, for they said, "He is out of his mind." When they arrived at the house, they could not get through the press of people, so they sent someone in to call him. "Your mother and brothers are outside looking for you." "Who are my mother and my brothers?" Jesus asked. Then he looked at those seated in a circle around him. "Here are my mother and my brothers. Whoever does God's will is my brother and sister and mother." Now, we are used to the idea of developing circles of friends who often know us much better and spend more time with us than our parents and siblings. But this idea would have been quite shocking in Jesus' time. The family bond was tight-knit and long-lasting. It was normal for children to stay close to their parents, often in the same house, living and working alongside each other. Actually, I think that's happening in an awful lot of our homes now, because our children simply can't afford to get away, but they'd get away if they could. So not only was Jesus breaking the mold because of his itinerant lifestyle and the company he was keeping, because frankly, his ragtaggle band of followers were not the usual types to be associated with a rabbi, but Jesus' teaching was also attracting attention from the authorities and thereby potentially bringing scandal and shame on the family. Watching Jesus immerse himself in this new way of life, as well as listening to him make such radical statements about who his real family were, must have sometimes been very painful for Mary. But Jesus never stopped loving his mother. Right at the beginning of his ministry, we get a glimpse of just how close their bond is. They were attending a wedding. When the wine ran out, Mary asked Jesus to do something about it. John 2, 4. Dear woman, why do you involve me? My time has not yet come, Jesus replied. However, he humoured her request and transformed several gallons of water into wine. And now, at the end of his life, as Mary was standing at the cross, Jesus was just as concerned to make sure that her needs were well provided for. John 19, 26. Dear woman, here is your son. And to the beloved disciple, here is your mother. And once again, Jesus was doing something that would have been seen as really unorthodox. After all, Mary had other children who are listed in Mark 3. Surely Jesus would have asked one of them to care for his mother instead of John. But Jesus had very good reasons for not doing this. Jesus didn't just want Mary's practical needs to be taken care of. He also wanted her to be looked after spiritually. And for this, she needed to be taken into one of his disciples' homes. For Jesus' brothers had still not recognized Jesus' true identity as God's Son, their Messiah. Mark 6:4 and John 7:5. Only in his hometown, among his relatives, and in his own home is a prophet without honor. That's Jesus talking about himself. For even his own brothers did not believe in him. This would all change after Jesus' resurrection. But right now, this still hadn't happened. So for Jesus, the obvious person to look after Mary was John. John is also known as the beloved disciples. Beloved disciple. Of all the disciples, John understood Jesus' command to love God and to love one another as God loves us. And if you want to understand exactly what love means, just read John's letters. They are so full of love that they're often used at weddings, my own included. Here's the thing. Jesus knew that John would care for Mary's practical needs. He knew that John would also care for her spiritual needs. And he knew that John would also care for Mary's emotional needs. He would love her as his own mother. And Jesus knew that Mary would love John in return. And he knew that they would both be a comfort to each other after his death. Moreover, John was the only one of Jesus' disciples who was actually present at the crucifixion. He was just a lad. He was the youngest by far amongst the 12. And for this reason, he was able to accompany the women who were there, because they weren't seen as a potential threat by the Romans. Unlike the other disciples who had gone into hiding, they feared for their lives. If they had appeared at the cross, they would have run a very real risk of being crucified alongside Jesus as his accomplices. And John's youth gave him yet another advantage. He would outlive the other disciples by many years. Jesus would be secure for the rest of her natural life. Thus, John was the best and the only choice for Mary. And how amazing that Jesus should be thinking of her at his moment of greatest distress, just before his death. This is what God is like: kind and compassionate, generous and attentive, rich in mercy. This is how he loves us and how he wants us to love others in return. As I said earlier, Jesus came to show us a whole new way of being family, one which transcends boundaries and puts God at the center. For people with difficult family situations, this can be a real lifesaver. Only this week, I had an email from a close friend whose family are putting her under pressure. She wrote, "Meanwhile, it is a comfort to know that Jesus found his mother and brothers in places other than his biological family, and he has granted me a similar gift of family, whether in the US, Pakistan, or indeed in the UK. As I was preparing this sermon, I thought about two particular women who've helped me to get to this point in my life. One was a family friend whom I used to call Auntie Dorothy, even though she wasn't my real auntie. My mother always seemed to be busy. She had four children and a large house and a garden to look after, but Dorothy always seemed to have time for me. I would pop in on my way home from town and help her in her garden, and we would talk about all sorts of things. She had a wonderful way of encouraging me. She steered me in the right direction, but with such a light touch that I didn't realise she was doing it. She was wise and funny, and I loved her a great deal. What I didn't know at that time was that my parents had once helped Dorothy in her hour of need. Because Dorothy was a single mother, it wasn't an easy situation in the late 50s. She had to leave her native Scotland to create a new life down south with her baby girl. My parents met her shortly after her arrival because she was a work colleague of my dad's, and he introduced her to my mother because of the Scottish connection. And my mum and my dad realised that she was alone and needed their help to settle into a completely new way of life in a new part of the country. They welcomed her into our family and introduced her to their own wide circle of friends. My mother babysat for her, and she and my dad generally did everything they could to make her life easier. So in a way, she was paying them back by looking after me. Dorothy died a few years ago, and I'll never forget her. The other friend is called Betty. Betty was instrumental in my becoming a Christian. I was on a holiday camp and Betty was one of the leaders. I wasn't at all sure about all this Christian stuff and I asked Betty all sorts of difficult questions. Sometimes it was because I really wanted to know the answer and sometimes it was because I was trying to keep God at arm's length. I didn't feel ready to take the plunge even though I knew deep down that what Betty was saying to me was true. She showed me endless patience and love. Betty was so gracious. She didn't give up on me. We're still in touch, and I will always be grateful for her loving persistence in sharing Jesus with me. So today is a day for celebrating mothers. But for me, it's also a day for thanking God for the other significant people who have loved me and who have helped to shape my life. And I wonder, who is your Dorothy? Who is your Betty? And one of the ways in which we can honour those who have loved us is to love others in our turn, as selflessly as Jesus has loved us. A popular film in the year 2000 is called Pay It Forward. I didn't actually see it, but now that I've been doing some research on it, I think I'll have to get hold of it. The film begins with a teacher giving his class an assignment. Think of an idea to change our world and put it into action. One of his pupils, Haley Joel Osment, comes up with the idea of paying it forward, doing something for three people that they otherwise wouldn't be able to do, and then encouraging them, in turn, to pay it forward to another three people each. Offshoots of this concept have sprung up in lots of different guises since then. And it made me wonder, how could we make a difference by seeking to bless at least three other people in a way that we have been blessed by the folk who have shaped our lives? How might we shape the lives of others in our turn, bringing practical love, spiritual support, and emotional growth? Maybe by becoming a second mother to someone who needs some extra support, or a surrogate grandparent, or maybe even becoming a son or a daughter to someone who has no children but who would be so grateful to have the company of a child to help them. Simply maybe by being a good friend to someone in their time of need, whatever age they are. We have so many opportunities to be a blessing to those around us. Above all, we have the life-changing message of Jesus to encourage those who have not heard it. Surely Jesus is the supreme example of a life that was laid down in love so that we might pay it on. John 13:34. A new command I give you. Love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. Amen.